Memory is based in emotion. It's based in how we feel, both positive and negative about things. History, in my opinion, comes with the discipline. And so both of those things look at the past and they're talking about the past, but they have different frameworks for how they go about talking about what has happened in the past.
I want to break that down a little bit. You know, when we think of Birmingham, you know, we think of those images of dogs and fire hoses. There's Jim Crow. How do those things look, say, through memory versus history?
I think there's a tendency to say, okay, memory's over on one side and it's completely subjective and it's just completely emotional and therefore it's usually clouded and it's usually wrong. And then we have this great scientific objective thing on the other side called history. And the unfortunate fact is history's not nearly that objective. Facts require interpretation. And so there always is a level of subjectivity in there, which is why there are a plethora of opinions on any given historical subject. That being said, facts have more or less consensus and can be discussed, and there's source material to support this is this fact that I have. Memory, on the other hand, tends to have less grounding in sources that someone who disagrees with me could also look at, and then we could have a conversation and say, well, on this line, it says this, and here's how I understand this. Memory is squishier.
It's sort of the difference between the stories that grandmother tells about what she remembers of Birmingham versus what the photographs from the civil rights protests tell me.
Yeah, and I think it's important to not disregard either end of that, because the experiences that your grandmother had are real and are sources in and of their own right. But you can't just pick the sources that you want to have. You need to look at all of them.
You said as you were looking at this, you found ways to that these paradigms could be used for reconciliation. What do you mean by that? Or how does that work in a practical sense?
There are some things that historical thinking gives us. Tools for interrogating sources and not just taking them at face value and saying, okay, this is what it says and off I go, but saying, how do you know that? Why are you saying this? Why did you take the time to write this down? Who are you? How do you know about this thing? Another tool is learning to see complexity and to see nuance. You get practice wrestling with multiple opinions and working on how to reconcile those into, if not a coherent whole, at least a colorful whole. And I think also history cultivates a sense of curiosity about things, especially about things that you don't understand or things that are different. With all of those things, history gives us a way of approaching differences between groups and cultivating that curiosity, which ultimately leads to empathy. And empathy is the first step to reconciliation and healing. There has to be a turning towards in order for there to be any type of healing or improvement on that relationship.
So that's the theoretical thought that undergirds all this. How does that play out in historical markers, signs? You look at murals in Northern Ireland. Where does this intersect with the actual tangible things?
Yeah, some of it is in the traditional public history places, so signs, museums, things like that. You give people sources that maybe say different things and then say, all right, what do you think about this? That's encouraging that type of thinking. Murals can do something similar, or they can do the opposite, depends on the content of the mural. Particularly the Troubles murals in Northern Ireland, I think, are examples of memory. And they're examples where you have this giant piece of public art on a three-story building that's saying unabashedly, this is how we're choosing to remember this particular event. Some of the other areas I look at are churches and social justice organizations. There's some great work that's been done in Northern Ireland about offering programming around historical events, but that does this work of challenging the traditional narrative and nuancing it and making it more complex. And when I was talking with folks in Northern Ireland who had led these courses, they found that people on both sides of the Troubles were able to find sort of their pockets of saying, yes, that is my story, and then also saying, I never knew that about this other story. They then had this turning of empathy, and people built friendships out of these classes and now had a greater appreciation for the story of the other side, but also now knew someone on the other side and had a personal relationship with them. And I think that a lot of the really successful reconciliation work that I saw is done on these very small interpersonal level.
Is this something that you feel really just does operate on the small level, the interpersonal level, or does it have a, you know, something that corresponds with that on a larger scale?
I think it's a bit of both, although probably more the interpersonal level. There certainly is something to be said for fact sharing. That is a lot of the work that's been done with truth commissions. What things are we talking about in the classroom? What things are we talking about at our local museums? What's on the signs? Are we acknowledging all of the people who have played a part in our history or just the people that make us feel good? And then on the other side of that, for reconciliation and healing to take place, I think there does need to be this recognition of a shared humanity. That is a hard thing to do on a mass scale.
This may be a little reductive or too simplistic, but it sounds to me like these objects are opportunities for conversation. But you're saying that there needs to be more thinking about how we have that conversation. Is that fair?
Yes. Yes, definitely. And I think that how we talk about things is sometimes more important than what we say.
We spent a lot of time looking at Birmingham. You spent a lot of time looking at Northern Ireland. I wonder, as you look at their histories of conflict, I mean, what similarities do you see? What differences do you see?
I think there's something to be said about, you know, obviously we see public history in museums. We see it in churches. Murals surprised me a lot. The fact that there was a corollary mural here in Birmingham at the Wells Fargo building that I could compare to these hundreds of murals in Belfast. I think some of the biggest differences within that are how those entities are approaching the histories and the conflict. The Birmingham Civil Rights Institute, I think, has a much clearer vision of the story they want to tell than the Ulster Museum does. The Ulster Museum takes a very conservative approach in their story and tries to appease both sides by not saying too much. I think the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute says, no, we're interpreting history, and this is our interpretation, and here's why we have come to this interpretation. And I think it's a much stronger result. Churches are another example. 16th Street Baptist Church, I think, does a really impressive job of sharing their history as a congregation and as participants in the civil rights movement, along with reminding people that they're a living congregation that is still doing things, that they weren't just active in the 60s, but they're active now. In Northern Ireland, one of the biggest critiques of churches in Northern Ireland was that they didn't do much to stop the Troubles. They sort of didn't seem to know how to respond to it. And so while there are pockets of religious leaders and churches who have tried to do reconciliation work, it's a lot harder to find acknowledgement of the Troubles in churches in a formal way.
Do you feel the research you've done, are there any lessons learned or any applications for people who are living in the American South or living in the midst of this history?
I definitely think that there is. I think part of it is we need to get the conversation out of academia, and academics need to stop talking just to other academics. For people living in the South and trying to figure out how to respond to this history, I think a big part is starting with thinking about the nature of history, of who we're telling these stories to, why we're telling them, how are we telling them, what sources are we using to tell them. And that applies to sort of the big histories of museums or of classrooms, but it also applies to the stories that we tell around the dinner table and around Thanksgiving and when grandma's reminiscing, which is wonderful, but starting to have an awareness of that process of, okay, these themes keep coming up. There seems to be something here. or, you know, we only talk about this thing and we never talk about this other thing. I wonder why that is. So I think that a big part of this is starting to think about how we talk about history and approaching history with curiosity, and then approaching others and the history of others with that same curiosity.